Welcome back to Our Soul, a podcast by Faith Choice Ohio, Ohio's faith voice for choice.
Welcome back to another episode of Our Soul. This episode is on location. Yes, that's right. Fabulous New Orleans is right outside the window that both Kelly and I are sitting next to. This is really weird to be recording a podcast right next to you because usually we're far away, connected with the internet. Yep. Why are we in New Orleans?
Well, we're here for Sacred. So Sacred, oh gosh, I'm going to get this right. Spiritual Alliance for creating reproductive dignity.
Spiritual Alliance of Communities.
Communities for reproductive dignity.
There we go.
So we
are
here for the Sacred Conference here in New Orleans. We started off, today is Tuesday, May 7th. Sometimes I feel like it's really important to say what day it is because we never know what's going to happen. But we're here. We're kind of through our first day of actual conference work. And we're excited. We're doing a little bit of, we have like a little table. We did worship together this morning. There are workshops. I'm going to be doing a workshop tomorrow. And you know, we're just like here with other people of faith who are pro-repro, which I know for some people that sounds like a revolutionary idea, but it's actually, you know, we talk about how we are pro-abortion because of our faith, not in spite of it. And now we're gathered with a lot of people who are in the same, you know, in the same boat, along the same lines, caring about reproductive justice because of our faith. And there was a whole moment this morning where in the opening worship where they said the definition of reproductive justice from Sister Song, and the collective like understanding of the how important that definition is to us. And I mean, I can repeat it.
Bishop Andrea Vassal was the one at the microphone at the time, and Bishop said, I know that the vast majority of us in this place know this definition, but we're gonna say it anyway because saying the thing is important.
Yeah.
And that's why we always say the thing. So how about you say the thing? What's the definition, Kelly, of reproductive justice from Sister Song?
So I actually, when we were having the definition read this morning, there was like the beginning part that I never say. And I think it's like the moral rights or something like that. Anyway, but it's the right to have children, to not have children, and to parent the children we have in safe and sustainable communities.
And the first part is, it's worded differently in some places, but usually it is the moral right to bodily autonomy.
Ah.
And the concept, of course, the right to have children, the right to not have children, parent the children we do have in safe and sustainable communities, all of that presupposes you have bodily autonomy.
Yeah.
But again, stating that, because we live in a culture and we live in a society where there are a lot of people who don't believe that many people or even most people should have bodily autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
That is, bodily autonomy being the ability to make decisions for yourself, and decisions that govern your body belong to you.
Mm-hmm.
We live in a state, even though we're down here in Louisiana, our state in Ohio, way back yonder, there are people who don't believe that people should have the right to govern their own bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Not just about abortion and all of the repro values that we hold so dear, but over lots of things.
Mm-hmm.
Over, you know, how you treat your body in terms of care and medical assessment. How you allow your body to be used in labor and for wages. Like, there's a broad expanse when you start thinking about all the ways that your body is used in ways that you do not choose.
Mm-hmm.
That bodily autonomy piece is so, so central.
Yeah.
And I find it fascinating for us here in this space. There is a lot of care in this conference set up around honoring consent and honoring your bodily autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
I spend a lot of time at conferences with different congregations, with different faith communities, my own faith community. And I've got to say, when you come around repro people, you know that we're going to take time to make sure that everybody has consent, mm-hmm. everybody has a level of comfort and informed consent. Mm-hmm. We have on our name tags, we have these nice little stickers that indicate your preference level for touching, mm-hmm. whether you are open to hugs and being, you know, touched and having physical interaction with people. A different color if you don't want people touching you, you don't want to have, you know, physical contact. And yet another option if you want people to ask before they engage you. And that whole conversation is something that most spaces and places just don't have.
Yeah.
There's an assumption at conferences that, oh, well, we just want to know, like, what's your name? Slap your name tag on there. It gets you into things. I look at our name badges. Like, we have our name. We have where we are from, of course, situated, like, our organization. And then we've got space for our pronouns. We've got space for that, you know, conversation sticker. Before we could get our name tags at Sacred, we had to go through a COVID test procedure. Because the assumption is you don't want to be bringing COVID to all your friends here at the reproductive justice work that we do. It's just a fantastic place that feels like a safe and welcoming vision of the future.
Yeah, really. Yeah. And I really appreciate the ways that Sacred has taken extra steps, not only to honor bodily autonomy, but... you know, I talk about restorative and transformative justice on this podcast all the time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, so today I served as a workshop facilitator, and a part of the kind of not really a training, but like the discussion that we had before facilitating our workshops was talking about, you know, if there is an instance of conflict, if there is an instance of, you know, say a person is taking a lot of space and not leaving room for other people, or etc. other ways, talking to the person whose workshop you're helping facilitate, talking to them about, like, how do you want to navigate that, and how can we work together to make sure that it's not one that's, like, punitive or shutting people down, but rather, you know, maintaining order while also, you know, respecting the person and what they have to say and honoring them. So that was just, like, the fact that there's a space in there. There's in the emails about how we do the workshops and stuff like that. There was a whole spot talking about transformative justice. There were links to transformative justice resources and things like that. And to put that into practice in a workshop space is just something that I have not seen in a lot of places. And also, even leading up to us coming here, there were... forms that we could fill out to say, like, what our preferences were and say what we needed. And as somebody who's presenting, I also felt honored in being able to give what I need and name that. And so, like, one thing that has been, you know, emphasized is, like, okay, make sure to use the microphones in your sessions, because a lot of people have asked for having that audio capability. And in some of the bigger sections, when people are talking into the microphone, there's actually, like, an automated captioning, which I found is really great. So I think, like, being in this space, not only are we gathering together the people who have this value of reproductive justice and want to live that out in their faith lives, but also we're living into all the other things that go into that safe and sustainable communities portion, like transformative justice, like you know, accommodations, like being able to give informed consent. And it's just, like, really great to see that in a conference setting where, you know, like you were saying, Terry, like, a lot of the times it's just, we want your name, we want to know when you're going to show up, we want to know what your dietary restrictions are. But it's more than that. It's all of the different things that go into a conference experience, and making sure everybody can show up as their full selves, which I think is... great.
Absolutely. And the thing that I really love most about this gathering, this gathering, by the way, is the first in-person gathering for Sacred. Sacred had a convening 2 years ago in virtual space, mm-hmm. because, you know, 2 years ago, everything was in virtual space. We had to be in that space to be safe and to hold our communities. But the whole principle behind Sacred's gathering is that as a spiritual alliance of communities, it is a gathering of communities. It's a gathering of different circles. And what I find so fascinating and so nourishing in this space, the circles that we run in on a regular basis, many of them in different spaces and different places, a lot of them have come together in this space.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our former affiliates of RCRC, many of you know that we are a former affiliate of National RCRC. Those affiliates, of course, went many different directions and grew into independent organizations. We get to see a lot of our former affiliate mm-hmm. friends and colleagues that we still interact with on a regular basis. But in addition to those folks, we also get to engage with all of our legal friends. We have people from the Law, Rights, and Religion Project at Columbia, a lot of folks from different organizations, the ACLU among them, who help to protect individuals who are offering care and quote-unquote aiding and abetting in some states. I say that somewhat flippantly, but it's very serious for people. You know, particularly our colleagues in Texas have just horribly punitive laws. So all these different circles, all these different spaces, and we have people from many different religious traditions, over 40 different religious traditions that are represented in this space that are all calling on their own community strength to then strengthen this gathering of communities.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, the sacred, the acronym is really kind of unwieldy and a little difficult, but guess what? So is this movement,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, this whole movement is filled with people and groups and organizations that are trying to find a way where for so long there has been no way.
Mm-hmm.
We are trying, I went to a workshop earlier today, that was a gathering of a few people from First Unitarian Universalist Church in Dallas. For those who are listening, you will remember this is the church that Roe began at so many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
They helped to support the challenge to the law that eventually gave us the Roe framework. This is also the church that when Roe fell, they ended up partnering with folks at New Mexico RCRC, one of our former affiliate friends,
mm-hmm.
To have regular flights out of Texas from Dallas into Albuquerque to be able to take people to get the care that they needed out of the state of Texas. So a congregation that just like constantly does this work. And they were talking about their engagement in the local community to open up a truth pregnancy resource center. So it is not a fake clinic. It is a real resource center that can refer people for care mm-hmm. and abortion care included. And there were some people in the gathering who said, you know, how in the world does this happen? Like, how did your congregation end up in this place to do this ministry? And their ministers and the layperson who was there, they said, well, you've got to understand, we don't do this alone.
Mm-hmm.
None of us do this alone.
Mm-hmm.
And none of us get here alone.
Mm-hmm.
This is a community effort, many communities, many groups of people. And we had to build infrastructure in the same way that systems of oppression are built in rich and strong, interconnected webs of oppression. We have to build rich and interconnected webs of resistance
mm-hmm.
to be able to combat those existing systems that harm, kill, and destroy. Because we are not here to harm, kill, and destroy. We are here to flourish
mm-hmm.
and to flourish as a whole collective. And that just like spoke to my whole soul because I thought, oh my gosh, this is the work that we are doing in Faith Choice Ohio. This is the work that you are doing,
mm-hmm.
Kelly, in transformative justice practices, those TJ practices that say, guess what? We all get free together.
Mm-hmm.
We don't, freedom and liberation, it's not a contest.
Yeah.
It is not an Olympic competition. It is a collective practice.
Yeah, yeah. And I think about the worship that we had this morning, and I think about how during that worship, there were multi-faiths that were represented. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just, you know, a Christian space. It wasn't just a, you know, Muslim space. There was Hindu. There was just all kinds of practices that were involved in the worship space. And I think, you know, when you're talking about, like, there's this interconnected web of oppression, I think in some ways that we do have this connected web. I mean, that's why we're here. Mm-hmm. But when we go back to our independent spaces, it can kind of feel isolating, because when we don't have those connections, when we haven't built them as strongly. So, I mean, I think this is a really important space to be in, and to be able to name that, like, we have to build the structures that the antis have already built. And I know we were talking a little bit about this before, but this reminded me of, like, how difficult it can sometimes be to go up against, like, a very strong opponent. You know, I think a lot about how the religious right have taken religion. And one reason that, even though I'm not, like, really practicing in my religion, I still care a lot about this, is, like, the antis have taken religion and tried to claim it for themselves. And the reason that I think that they've easily, quote unquote easily, we are not down, you know, we're still fighting. Mm-hmm. But one reason that I think that they've been really successful is that they have, you know, absolute truths that they name, because it's easier to control something that you can have an absolute truth over. And I think on the other side, being in a space that honors intersectionality, honors multiculturalism, honors being in multi-faiths, it can be harder to be like, we have an absolute truth, because we don't. And I think in general, everything is, there is no absolute truth, in my opinion. But that does make it harder for us to, like, organize around an opposition that has absolute truths that they can name. And there is some amount of security that goes into having absolutes and being able to name, like, this is what I believe and I can say this is right. Whereas being on the other side, where, I mean, I went to a session on queer womanism and sensuality and wholeness. And in that, we talked about, like, living into our authentic selves. The facilitator said, you know, I'm going to answer this question for how I feel today, but, like, don't hold me to that, because tomorrow it could be completely different. And just, like, naming as a part of womanism, which, for those who have never heard that term before, is, like, a Black feminism, in short. I can include some resources in the show notes. But she named as a part of womanism is this ability to change your mind. And that can just, like, make it difficult to organize around, but, like, the difficult doesn't mean that it's not worth doing, and it doesn't mean that it's impossible. So I think, you know, what you were naming, we have to build that web. We have to be secure, and even in, to go to that transformative justice lane, even when we're in conflict with each other, even when we have differing opinions, going back to, we know that we have this baseline value of reproductive justice, and we want to show up for each other and want to be a part of this interconnected web. In my organizing training, we talk about building the largest us and the smallest them. Mm. And so by building this interconnected web, what we're creating is an us, and naming that, you know, we talk about how this, like, the silent majority and the loud minority. You know, there are lots of people of faith who are pro repro and pro abortion, and just needing to build together. And, you know, I say it, you say it, we can all feel safe in knowing that we are on the same side. Mm-hmm. And create that larger us and the smaller them, and then making it more public to people who may think that the them is big. No, we have a big us.
Just as you were sharing that, you know, the largest us and the smallest them, it reminded me of two faith stories that came out today in worship and just after worship in the plenary. It's kind of hard when you're in a very worshipful setting. Like, what was worship and what wasn't? Like, it's all worship, especially when we finally got to lunch. But that's all another conversation. You knew that was going to come up at some time. So the two things, though, that it reminds me of, the Christian story in my faith tradition of Jesus talking about loving your enemies, mm-hmm. right? That your enemies are your enemies in this kind of ancient, you know, first century Judean context. And Jesus comes into that context and goes, no. You've got to love these people. Mm-hmm. And because you're trying to actively love people who don't even love themselves mm-hmm. in many ways, it reframes the world in a way to where you will not lose, even if you do not succeed in your temporal goals in this moment. You do not lose in the long run because you have refused to become the product of oppression and violence and harm. Mm-hmm. You refuse to propagate that and to keep that moving in the world. I found that really profound that, you know, it was brought in by a couple of the speakers just naming that. Like, Jesus asked people to love their neighbor and to love their enemy, and that was enough to get him killed, right?
Yeah.
Like, that was serious. The other piece that I found really profound, we had a Muslim speaker, a reflector, who shared how she, as a female in her Muslim tradition, views a different world because of her positionality and because mm-hmm. of where she is. And she gave the example of, you know, when a Muslim man leads prayer, he leads prayer from in front of the congregation, in front of the group who is gathered for prayer. When a Muslim woman leads prayer, she is shoulder to shoulder mm. with her colleagues, with her peers. And, you know, the speaker, of course, named, you know, there's no way for me not to relay some really gendered stereotypes in this, because this is part of the tradition. However, there is something profound about being a Muslim woman and saying, guess what? We are in this together, mm. and we are shoulder to shoulder. It is all us. Mm-hmm. It is all us together. We're not going to have that division.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it makes me dream and wonder, like, what would it look like if we are able to really see a future where everybody flourishes, everybody thrives?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we fight for things like access to abortion, access to birth control, access to comprehensive sexuality education, access to safe and sustainable communities of every variety, right? Communities that are not terrorized by gun violence, terrorized by state-sanctioned violence, terrorized by poverty and hunger and homelessness. When we fight for those kind of communities, we're fighting for that kind of future, not just for the people who agree with us and not just for the people who are fighting arm in arm with us. We're fighting for a future where the most virulent anti-abortion advocate has access to abortion.
Yeah.
And where the most virulent anti-protest person has the right to stand up and protest and mm-hmm. and engage their grievances in mm-hmm. the world. Keeping that centered, it really helps in this space to hear that
mm-hmm.
because I need more of that in my life. Mm-hmm. I need to keep that centered. You get such a lack of perspective when you're not around people who remind you, like, you're fighting for everybody.
Yeah.
You're fighting for everybody's freedom.
Yeah. When you were talking about, like, loving your enemies, I mean, I quote this this line from Adrienne Marie Brown's Emergent Strategy, which, side note, our plenary speaker was Alexis Pauline Gumbs, Dr. Alexis Pauline Gumbs, who wrote Undrowned, which is a part of the Emergent Strategy, like, series mm-hmm. That Adrienne Marie Brown does. I have not read Undrowned yet, but it is something that has been on my, like, TBR for a long time. So now I'm going to have to pick it up because I've seen her. Anywho, I quote this line a lot in Emergent Strategy, and I think it kind of is along the lines of what you were saying. So the quote from Adrienne Marie Brown is, "I see the miraculous in others. Even those who hate me have heartbeats and, I generally assume, have people they love. Why can't they love me? Should I love them anyway? How do I hold these massive contradictions? And, you know, when we're thinking about, like, we're creating a better world for everyone, even those who are our opposition, even those who are actively fighting for us not to win, I think, like, thinking in that context of, like, even if they are not, you know, I'm thinking from, like, a transformative justice mindset, but even if they are not healed to the point that they can name their insecurities, if they are not, you know, in a space to find healing, I am still going to advocate as much as possible for their healing and their wholeness. Like, I've said multiple times on this podcast that I believe that if Ohio politicians would just go to therapy, like, we could have, like, a much better world. And I mean that seriously. Like, I am an advocate for therapy. I go to therapy every week. In many ways, like, therapy has made me realize the unhealed parts of myself that have caused conflict in the past. The unhealed parts of myself who were not, or that were not ready for conflicts that happened in my past. And therefore ended in places where, you know, I create enemies out of people who could have been friends, or maybe I didn't advocate for people who, like, deserve healing and wholeness as much as I do. But that was because I was unhealed and I was not ready to talk about, you know, those who hate me having heartbeats and people they love. Like, but through therapy, through processing, through talking and having a space, safe space where I can just, like, let my feelings out, and also somebody who will call me out on when I'm holding my feelings back, I have gotten to a place where, like, I feel comfortable saying, you know, in my restorative and transformative justice training, I talk about, like, how I forgive the person who abused me, even though I do not plan to ever have a relationship with him. I forgive him because I don't need to hold that, and I recognize that, like, I genuinely don't believe that a person could harm other people in such a, like, big way without they themselves being harmed. And I can say that because I've been through, you know, I've been going to therapy since I was, like, 18, and I'm going to be 28 this year. Like, at least 10 years of therapy, if not more. And I think, like, you know, having these conversations, being in spaces where we can talk about, like, you know, being in conflict with people or wanting the best for those who are against us. I think it's good to be in this space, and I'm really glad and, you know, excited about doing my workshop tomorrow on restorative and transformative justice, because I was talking to somebody today about how I'm doing that tomorrow and having conversations about how sometimes it's hard to start to be in a space where we can start having conversations about what does it look like to do restorative and transformative justice in practice, because to even get to the starting line, you have to have this baseline understanding of I am a human, and there are parts of me that are not perfect, and sometimes I don't wish the best for others, but I can name that, and I can ask other people to hold me accountable to the overall goal that we've decided together, which is, like, liberation for everyone, even those who may hate me. Anyway, that is actually the end of our time. I am just really excited for the rest of Sacred, and I'm sure we'll talk more about it when we come back. But for now, that's all, and we'll be back in 2 weeks.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Our Soul. If you'd like to hear more of our conversations on religion, abortion access, and all things repro, you can find all of our episodes on Podbean, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Audible. For more content, training, or to donate, check us out at faithchoiceohio.org.